how about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's Jean-Lit Foot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hey, what's up, folks? Welcome to another edition of Football Theory. I am Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers, joined by the coach. He needs no introduction, but I'll give him one anyway. He was a college football player at Abilene Christian, also coached there on multiple occasions. He's also been on the staff at the University of Texas on multiple occasions as well for five different seasons. He's coached at Belton, Brownwood, Capel, Rotan as a high school football coach, and now he joins us. Also, you can catch his work these days at ShipleyRanches.com. It is Coach Bob Shipley. What's going on, Coach? How you doing?
Hey, Rod. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Coach. Always fun to talk ball with you, especially when there's actually football going on right now. I can't believe we're already halfway through spring ball. We spend all this time talking about football, but when football is actually happening, when it's actually upon us, it goes by like that. It goes by in a flash, man. I guess time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, Coach. I want to get three topics I want to get into today for Football Theory. First, I would like to get your thoughts about a quote that Jordan Whittington had. He's making the rounds. He's hopefully heading to the NFL draft, where he'll be drafted. Well, he's not going to the draft, but hopefully he'll be drafted. If not, he'll try to make his way to the NFL the hard way as an undrafted free agent. And he's being asked about his time on the 40 acres, and he's telling a lot of cool stories and talking about his experiences. And he talked about his favorite play on the 40 acres. I want to get your thoughts about it, because I know you got offensive line knowledge. And it would be Jay Witt. His favorite play was a run play. Witt's favorite play at Texas, guys, was not a pass play. You would think he's a wide receiver. Of course it's going to be a pass play. No, Coach, it was a running play. It was a play where he had to block. That would be Jay Witt. Jay Witt in a nutshell. So I want to get your thoughts about it, because I think it's really interesting. And I want to learn a lot from you, because I don't know a lot about this concept. And I'm looking to be a student of the game once again and have a coach break it down for me. I also want to get your thoughts about the new DC. We haven't co-DC, Johnny Nansen. We haven't talked a lot about him, but I have a couple of theories just based on my research, how he could possibly influence PK as a defensive play caller and PK as a defensive coordinator. So I want to get your thoughts there as well. And I want to get your thoughts about one more item coming up on the show. I want to get your thoughts about the 2-minute drill defense specifically. Sark talked about now they're putting in situational football. They're teaching the guys red zone, third down, money downs, short yardage, and 2-minute. You mentioned that specifically. 2-minute drill on defense actually last year was a troublesome area for Texas. And actually, they gave up a lot of plays in the 2-minute drill on defense. Actually lost a game to the Oklahoma Sooners, right, with 2-minute drill defense. I want to talk about how they can improve on that. And what the Longhorns can do, and what they need to do. Put my head together with your coaching acumen and coaching wisdom, and try to figure out how the Longhorns can improve in that area. So, three different items on the agenda here for Football Theory. Before we get to any of those, though, let's give a shout out to our wonderful sponsor. We're really thankful for Laura Baker and her team. Football Theory is brought to you by accomplished Austin realtor Laura Baker and the Andy Allen team at Keller Williams. They can handle all of your real estate needs in the Austin area. Laura is not only a diehard Longhorn fan, but a longtime Austin real estate expert. So give her a shout, please, at 512-784-0505. That's 512-784-0505. Thank you very much to Laura Baker and the Andy Allen team at Keller Williams for sponsoring Football Theory. All right, Coach, let's get right to it. I got to read this quote to you from my man, Jordan Whittington. It's from Draft Network. They did an interview with him. They asked him, hey, what's your favorite play? And as I pointed out earlier, Jordan Whittington brought up a run play as his favorite play. This is every coach's dream, right? He's just an unselfish guy. He's willing to block. That's his favorite play on the team. So this is his quote. He said, quote, that's a great question. We had this regular run play in our playbook called duo. We'd get in our bunch formation, and when we're running this play repeatedly, we're basically telling you we're beating you both mentally and physically. It was our statement play, if that makes sense. We absolutely love that run play. We just run that play over and over again. Whenever we felt like the game was over, the opposing team couldn't handle that play. That was my favorite play. That's when I knew we had him on the ropes. I remember this play now that he's describing it. I remember it in a Bama game. I remember it in the Baylor game a couple of years ago when they closed out the Baylor game with the run game and kind of choked the life out of the clock. Anytime they're doing that in a game situation, this is the play that they're running a lot of the times, and that's the play he's talking about. Coach, please break down duo for me and for the people out there, and please do it in layman's terms because, you know, sometimes my brain, that's not working that well this early in the morning. But break down duo. What is duo?
Okay, well, it's a great play, as a matter of fact. And a lot of times you'll see plays go up the ladder, for example, you'll see plays maybe in college, high school, work their way into college, and then eventually you'll see it in the NFL. The NFL has been slower to change sometimes to a spread, a spread type offense. But the duo is a great running play because it's really popular to run a zone, and when you're running a zone, sometimes it's a lateral play, and the running back is just. He just starts play side and works his way back. And he's just trying to find some space to run to. But you're just spreading everybody out as they go along laterally. And the good thing about running the duo is it's very much like the power, which is a vertical play coming off the ball. The thing about duo, the reason they call it duo is because you have two double teams. And so you're really – that makes a lot of sense when Jay Whip's talking about that because you're just smashing people off the ball. And it's a lot like power. You see power a lot in high school and in college. But as the guys get bigger in college, when your linemen are 325 pounds, you're not going to be pulling quite as much because they're not quite as agile, as a little smaller. And so it's perfect for the linemen because they don't have to worry about pulling. They're just coming off, and your inside guy's kind of eyeing the linebacker to make sure he's not running through. But the running back typically just takes one step towards the tight end, or what as Jay Witt said, that they had the bunch on their side, or it could be a wing, an H back off the line, whatever. Anyway, he takes one step that way, then he goes right at the play side guard, his rear. That's his aiming point, and he tries not to be in too big a hurry. You don't necessarily have the play side linebacker blocked, which is the beauty of this. That's the person that the backside guard pulling would usually block on a power. And so he's just going to read that play side linebacker. And if that linebacker tries to go over this top, then he'll keep it inside. If the linebacker tries to plug it inside because it looks like an inside zone to him, then he'll break it outside. Okay. Outside of him, and then you've got the receiver coming over the top blocking the safety, which, by the way, when I first heard Jay Witt, I thought, okay, he's talking about the RPO off of this, surely, because it's a great RPO play as well, because you've got the outside receiver coming in to block the safety, especially if the running back's going to break outside. And so it really works into a really nice RPO, because sometimes if the safety's – if the safety's crashing down, then the outside from the inside receiver, the outside receiver can just run a dig where the safety was. And so as you're pounding people with it, the head coach is hollering, stop them, stop them, stop them. So you start telling your safety, hey, I need you to come up and run support. I need your run support. So the safety starts coming up. Now that leads your X or your Z with nobody underneath on an in route. And so you'll see a lot of RPOs on it. But I love the fact that Jay Witt, like you said, man, he's going to call a run play, and it's a smash mouth running play.
Yes. You'll see it at every level.
There's a lot of high school teams running it now, lots of college, but it's big time in the NFL. And it's a tough play to defend. It really is, because no matter what that linebacker does, he's wrong.
Yeah, no, that's a great breakdown, Coach. I wrote down some notes here. I'll probably go back and watch and make sure I got all your notes there. But that was a great breakdown of the duo. That's what football theory is all about, ladies and gentlemen. And yeah, I think it's fitting that Jay Witt, he just wants to block. He enjoys it, actually. That's what it tells me. That's his favorite play. He actually enjoys blocking, which means he enjoys doing for others. He enjoys doing the grunt work so his teammates can shine. Oh man, I hope an NFL team, and I hope he's got a pro day coming up. I believe he's going to have a kind of a private pro day. He admitted that in the interview too. So hopefully he performs really well at his private pro day, and hopefully a team gives my man Jay Witt a shot. Though, great breakdown there, Coach. All right, I got another.
Rod, I just want to say one thing about Jay Witt. Is he not the perfect guy when he's through chasing his dreams to get him back on campus?
Yeah.
Get him back on campus around those kids in some capacity. I don't know if he has any desire to coach or whatever, but, you know, we've got a couple of NFL guys that are around the program now. And yeah.
You're right about that.
Yeah, he would be a great one to come back, because how awesome is it to have a guy – talking to the receivers and people on the team that saw him, and he may have been their idol, and they saw the way he hustled, they saw the way he loved to block. It's a whole different mentality than 99% of the receivers, you know, probably because he used to be a running back. But but you bring Huff Daddy back, and it'd be great to have Jay Witt back on the offensive side of the ball to help in some capacity, maybe even help in player development, just with that attitude, you know, the player development. It's not physical development, it's mental and emotional development. And, you know, just talking to those guys like Huff does
That's a good idea. Yeah. Because he's got natural leadership ability. You know, he's got an outstanding football character. He obviously showcased that last season. But he's got the respect of the coaches, the players. I wonder what his – I mean, I'm not trying to usher him, you know, into retirement from football already, but I do wonder what Jay Witt's, second career is going to be, or what if he's going to decide he wants to do, because I think he's got a lot of fortitude. He's got a great character. We know he's got tremendous work ethic. He's able to overcome trials and tribulations. So great perseverance. He proved a lot of that. And depending on what he decides to do, maybe this football related, I'm with you, man. If it is, Texas should give him a shot early to be around the program. He's got a lot of respect for the teammates. Okay, good stuff there. I want to get your thoughts also about Coach Johnny Nansen, who's coming in as the linebackers coach, but also the co-DC. I don't think we were given enough credit to what the impact could be with him as a co-DC, because he had a fantastic defense at Arizona.
Yeah.
And it was one of the best defenses in the country. And I've been thinking, you know, there are certain qualities that defenses have. There's certain, defensive philosophies that coaches carry with them all throughout their tenure. You, Coach, I'm sure have your own. Those are just they're almost character traits of you as a coach and your style and brand of football that you want to play, that you want to coach. And PK has his tendencies, and his tendencies actually have changed. When PK first came in, he wasn't playing as much quarters defense. Now Texas plays a lot of quarters defense, which is cover four. It's match quarters, which is essentially a zone defense that devolves into a man defense. It's a zone man concept. But so basically it's a zone that you end up matching up with guys when the route combinations, when they declare themselves, you end up matching up on those guys that are in your zone. So they call it match quarters. They play a lot of that now after post Gary Patterson. That was a Gary Patterson staple.
Yeah.
Right? You know, when Gary Patterson came on staff, it became a PK staple. PK was influenced by Gary Patterson, gave him kind of the blueprint of the Big 12 and said, no, got to go more match quarters, man. It's just the nature of the beast here in the Big 12. And it helped PK out tremendously. And PK now, I believe, out of all the coverages, they run more match quarters than any of the coverage. When Johnny Nansen was at Arizona, they ran more cover three, actually, than any – actually, the second highest rate of cover three snaps in college football. In the Power Five. Power Five. So still a really, really high rate. And Texas, in terms of their cover three rate, based on the numbers that I have, they're around between 20 and 25% cover three rate. When it comes to their match quarters or their cover four, I mean, they're probably approaching 40%, which is as high a number as most teams in the Big 12. Is it possible that once again we could see a coach influence PK? Another thing is they're going into a different conference too, Coach. And you got Johnny Nansen coming from the Pac-12, a spread conference. You had, PK in the Big 12, which is kind of a hybrid spread league. And you had Gary Patterson influence his philosophy in the Big 12. But when you're going into a new ecosystem, that also can change your tendencies and your habits and your traits as a coach. Do we see PK influence coverage-wise a little bit by Johnny Nansen here and playing a little bit more cover three potentially? Or do you think that right now this is the blueprint for PK?
Yeah, I don't see it going into the SEC personally, but I mean, you know, those guys are obviously on top of things. And the reason I say that, Rod, is because cover three, which is a three deep secondary, it's not as good of defense against running teams. Mm-hmm. You know, it can help you on the deep ball because, you know, you've got typically three deep guys, but you don't have the run support like you do in cover two, and or four and two look a lot alike. You know, a lot of people don't know whether it's not that many people are really running cover two anymore. They're running variations of it.
Yeah.
But I don't see us playing three deep a lot, but I'm sure as everything evolves, there is a way to evolve cover three into being more of a run support defense, I guess. It wouldn't certainly be a true cover three, but I see him as being a coach. Most of his time has been on the West Coast. Certainly, he's going to help us recruiting, and we have had some pretty good luck going into Arizona and California and getting players. And so I see that helping us. But also I see, the year before he came to Arizona, they had six turnovers. His first season, they had 16 turnovers. Mm-hmm. That's an improvement of 10 turnovers. You get 16 turnovers and they play 12 games. That's pretty good numbers. So I see him maybe being fairly aggressive, which I'm hoping. Not that we're not aggressive enough, but I do think that turnovers, a lot of times you're gambling, you know, with coverages or you know, trying to strip the ball or whatever. And I like aggressive coaches. So if he brings more aggression in, that's good with me. Anybody that can get 16 turnovers in 12 games is doing a pretty good job.
I think you're definitely right about that, Coach. We know Texas wants to play more man coverage, so that's going to happen, especially with the kind of athletes they're recruiting. And Johnny Nansen, his influence could be playing more man coverage, which they did in Arizona. They played man coverage around 27, 28% of the time. And Texas wants to increase their percentage and rate of man coverage. So that could also be the an influence of Johnny Nance, that, hey, man, he's going to play more man coverage, something Sark wants to do. And that is part of being more aggressive, as you said, Coach, being more aggressive, dictating the tempo, dictating the terms of the matchup. And I think he wants to do more of that. Also, I'll throw out there versatility. I know that's kind of the word, the buzzword of the offseason, and I've been throwing it out a lot, but I think he could bring more multiplicity in terms of the personnel groupings. You know, PK likes to play a 4-2-5 a lot of times. We've seen him switch it up. You can go to a 3-3-5. Haven't seen a lot of dime packages, which are six DBs with PK. Haven't seen a lot of, you know, this a seven DB package. Remember Todd Orlando famously had his seven defensive, that's a lightning package, they called it, the seven defensive back package. Maybe you could get more versatile. We talked about the athletes themselves now becoming more versatile, right? You got your Anthony Hills. I think Ethan Burke's got some versatility in his skill set. They're cross-training all the defensive backs, and Jadae Barron and Makuba are really versatile defenders. That offers you solutions, but also gives you a chance to promote versatility, not only with the personnel, but also with the scheme itself. Johnny Nansen, when he was at Arizona, he had what they call the Joker package at times that featured five down linemen in this Joker package. He had a dollar package that had seven defensive backs with three down linemen and one linebacker. I do wonder if that could be the influence of Johnny Nansen, that you're just getting more variety overall with the presentation. Scheme, concepts, all that stays the same. Responsibilities and roles stays the same. But maybe the presentation changes up a little bit in the way that you utilize and weaponize the personnel that you have, which is now more versatile than it has been.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a very good point. And some people may be scratching their heads a little bit why he would leave a DC job to come here. Well, mm-hmm. when you look at it, you know, if we continue on the trajectory that we're on right now, and we're playing for national championships and winning national championships, your coordinators are going to get head coaching jobs. Yep. And so I think it's a really smart move bringing a guy in like that who you know, see if he's going to work well with your staff, see if he's going to be able to handle the SEC and what we're doing. And then if PK gets another head job, then you know, yep. you move Johnny Nansen right in that spot. And hopefully you don't miss a beat. And that, you know, that's a Nick Saban type move when you look at what Sark's doing there.
I totally agree with you, Coach. And you got to plan for that. Now you got to plan for success. You've had success and you've lost coaches as a result. Nothing wrong with that. That's just part of success. Teams are going to want to replicate what you're doing, but you also need to have a contingency plan and be ready to lose some of those really good coaches. Seems like Sark is ahead of the game there. There's no question. All right, last item here, Coach, before we get out of here. Sark said now in spring they're starting to put in starting to implement situational football, starting to practice situations, money downs, third and fourth downs, short yardage, goal line, red zone, two-minute drill. Now, this is where games are won and lost pretty much. Situational football is the way you have to apply a really high football IQ. And one of those situations particularly kind of stood out to me because I remember last year Texas defensively struggled a little bit. It was actually two-minute drill defense. Remember, they lost the Oklahoma game essentially because of their two-minute drill defense or lack thereof when Texas allowed teams to kind of come back in some of those games where they had double-digit leads, 20-plus point leads. We saw Texas against K-State. We saw Texas give up plays in the two-minute drill. Teams had a really high explosive play rate in the two-minute drill against Texas. The missed tackle rate for Texas increased during two-minute drill. Now, they did improve late in the season against teams like Texas Tech and Oklahoma State and down the stretch against TCU when you had opportunities for two-minute drills. Now, you don't have always – it's always the end of the half. End of each half, you'll have that opportunity. So it wasn't in every game where they had the opportunity for a two-minute drill. They improved later in the year, but early on in the year, it was an issue, especially versus really good quarterbacks. How do you improve on two-minute drill defense? Because I wrote two things down. I think communication, I think, is the number one thing. Guys have to communicate well because everything's up tempo and the pace increases. So they eliminate any type of time that you have to discuss how to make an adjustment. You have to be able to communicate really, really well and concisely. And also I said football IQ, situational football. Guys have to kind of understand the situation, how many timeouts they have, how much time is left on the clock, what they're trying to do to them, where they are on the field, down the distance, and how they're trying to attack you. I don't think they had that early on in the season against Oklahoma, against K-State. I think it improved as the season went on. But those are the two things I wrote down as kind of the key priorities in terms of, and I think really kind of the key element of two-minute drill defense. I mean, communication's got to be on point, and football IQ is tested because you have to know the actual situation and circumstance you're in.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I think those are very important. Going back and looking, particularly OU, but in some other games where we struggle in that area, I know the coaching staff has already gone through, and if they haven't, they will. But I'm sure they've already gone through, and they've got so many GAs and analysts and things to break down and look at every situation. I know they've gone and looked through every play they gave up in two-minute defense last season and tried to, you know, figure out what happened. Was it scheme? Was it player? Players getting beat, players making bad decisions. When I go back and look at it, I see some bad play defensively with our cornerbacks and our secondary. That's what stood out to me was, I don't know if the moment was too big for them, or, you know, they got caught up in the hype and all the 2-minute offense and kind of, you know, forgot about, you know, responsibility and, you know, whatever it is that could have been a breakdown. But that's what I saw. But I do think that one of the things that's always important to keep emphasizing is for guys to stay calm. And just for the guys to stay calm, the coaches have to stay. If you got coaches screaming and yelling at the sideline, you know, well, man, that's chaos, you know. And the last thing, as you well know, that as a DB, you want going on back there is chaos. You want to be in control. You want the moment to be bigger than it really is. And so I think those are things that, you know, guys like Huff always, you know, can pour into kids because, you know, he's been there at the biggest moments and made big plays at the biggest moments in games. And, you know, just stay within yourself and, you know, look at things as a staff. You can correct scheme-wise and two-minute defense. Look at personnel. See what those guys, how they could have improved personally in their technique, their angle, point of attack, all those things, and then come up with a good plan. And I know that they're not leaving any rock unturned, and they'll get it figured out. I really think they will. But sometimes, you know, player A is just better than player B, and he goes up and gets the ball. You know, and there's just, you know, sometimes you can't do anything about that. But that should be the exception instead of the rule of thumb. And it seemed like for a while we were really reeling in those two-minute defensive situations. And so I'm sure they'll get – I don't know what the answer is, but that's where I would start.
Yeah, like Mac Brown used to always say, that guy's on scholarship too. But, no, I just it's not like something that's dire or a big issue. It is something that – Texas struggled with at times last season. And I, based on my notes, I thought it was interesting. Sark said he's putting in the situational football right now. And that was one of the few situations, because this is a really, really good team. One of the few situations that in red zone where, and you can make the argument, huh, they're better at 2-minute defense and they're better at red zone offense. They don't lose to Oklahoma. Those are the two biggest reasons they lost to Oklahoma: red zone offense, 2-minute defense. And then they obviously that kept them from having an undefeated regular season. So that's why I brought it up, and I thought it was interesting there. Okay, before we get out of here, Coach, let me give a shout out once again to our fantastic sponsor. We really appreciate Laura Baker and all of her support. Football Theory is brought to you by Accomplished Austin Realtor Laura Baker. Laura and the Andy Allen team at Keller Williams can handle all of your real estate needs in the Austin area. Laura is not only a diehard Longhorn fan, but a longtime Austin real estate expert. So give her a shout if you have any concerns or business in regards to Austin real estate. She's at 512-784-0505. That's 512-784-0505. So thank you very much to Laura Baker and the Andy Allen team at Keller Williams Realty. All right, Coach, thank you for the time. As always, I'm a smarter football guy as a result of your wisdom. So thank you for the time, Coach. We appreciate it.
Yep. My pleasure. Always enjoy it. Hey, I want to get us on. I want to get us at some point talking some Nick Saban stuff. That guy, be looking up some Nick Saban stuff. That guy, once he's retired, he's like, man, he's coming out and saying some things that like, I don't know if you read his, what was it, Black and Mild or whatever comment he made. Did you read that?
No, I didn't. I missed it. Was Nick Saban talking about Black and Mild?
He said, you guys out there celebrating, praising God and all this stuff, pointing up and all that out there, quit doing that stuff, because I know what you're doing at midnight. You got your Black and Mild, you got your girl, you drinking your liquor. He said, where's your God then, you know? We need to have a show just with Nick Sabanisms that he's saying now that he can really tell the truth. Man.
Look that up. I had not heard that. I did not know Nick Saban.
Good.
Unfiltered now, I guess is the term. Yeah. Oh, that's great. Okay, yeah, I'm down. Anytime you want to do that, we can talk about the GOAT, who's now, I don't know what he's going to end up doing, but whatever he's going to be doing is going to be pretty damn interesting. All right, Coach, good stuff there as always. For the Owen Texas football family, for Laura Baker and for Coach Shipley, but until next time here on Football Theory, join us. Matter of fact, let me remind everybody, join us for the Winning Drive Mondays and Thursdays, 4:15 to 5:30. Got to remind everybody that it's Coach Shipley, myself, and CJ Vogel. We always have a great time. And we talk a lot of football, theory on that show, but also a lot of good time. Maybe then we'll talk about Nick Saban.
There you go.
All right, Coach. Until next time, y'all. Hook 'em.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.